Blog Talk Radio.
Texas on Sunday, March 19th, an absolutely beautiful day here in North Texas. And today we're going to chat with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. We've got a lot to get into, beginning with this rather scary story out of North Korea. It sort of developed, it's been developing for a few days, but I think it went to maybe a different level of alert this afternoon with the Secretary of State, I think, meeting with the Chinese and the President making some remarks early this evening. I think this could get very scary here over the next few weeks. So we'll talk about North Korea. We'll talk about the CIA director speaking to Congress next week. He's going to be talking about these wiretaps, these allegations of wiretaps. He's also going to be talking about Russia and the Trump campaign. I thought it was interesting, a story that was in the news today that some Democrat insiders are sort of getting the word out to the base not to look for a lot of connection between Trump and the Russians, sort of like lowering the volume a little bit. I'm not sure they're going to be able to do it because a lot of the base of the Democrat Party is really invested in this story. So I'm not sure if they're going to be able to lower the volume, but that is anyway what is going on. Next week, Supreme Court nominations or the hearings for the next Supreme Court, hopefully it'll go by very smoothly. It should. But I'm sure we'll get our arguments about abortion and everything else from the Democrats. The GOP and Obamacare are going to be apparently doing something next week in the House. Rather interesting. Mr. Trump has a new budget, which I generally find a pretty interesting budget. Some other stories of the week, if we have a chance to get to. Bill had a very interesting post this week about the University of Maryland. And about Paris, France, the beautiful city of Paris. I guess not so beautiful anymore, not very safe. And, of course, what else can we say about Rachel Maddow, who absolutely made a fool out of herself this week on her radio, on her television program about the Trump tax return. So we got a lot to get into, but we begin by saying happy birthday to our friend Bill Katz. How are you, Bill?
Well, thank you. Thank you for saying happy birthday. It is so much fun being 28. In fact, I remember being 28. Lincoln was in the White House at the time. But thank you for your birthday.
So you're somewhere
wishes.
Between 28 and 35. We'll give you that range.
I would say that. Yeah, maybe I'm exaggerating a little bit, but you know, there's a point in life where you stop counting birthdays, and you're just happy to have them. But,
well, you know, Ronald Reagan, President Reagan, used to say that when he had his first birthday in the White House, which was just a few days or a few weeks after he was inaugurated, early February, that would have been his, I think that was number 70 for him. And he said, no, I just do anniversaries of my 39th birthday.
That's
so he
exactly
said it
right.
was, for him, it was the 31st anniversary of his 39th birthday, Bill. So you can
number. That number was made popular by Jack Benny, who always claimed to be 39, and it became kind of a national joke. Well, I share a birthday with my younger daughter, so in our house, we always minimized mine so that she could have a full birthday and not share it with anybody. So, it's something that over the years, birthdays take on a very different meaning, I think.
They do, but they're still fun to celebrate, at least to remember. We'll just put it that way.
Yes, and I got some nice cookies also, so it's
as my mother likes to say, when you get older, you'll be grateful that some people remember your birthday.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And We should always be gracious about these things. It's interesting that one of the things that you on I guess on any birthday is you look back. And I was thinking yesterday about birthdays past, and we have movies of my sixth birthday and all the rest, and to realize that it's only been in the last 50 or 60 years in all of human history, that people could look back and actually see themselves moving at an earlier age. Now, when you realize that the world is billions
right.
of years old, this is only in the last 50 or 60 years, and how life in the last century has changed so completely, much more so than any century of human history. And,
that's right.
And when you
You're
wonder
right.
what it's going to be like in 500 years, you know, Hillary will be in the White House, you know, refusing to go.
That's right. But she'll be in the woods, Bill. She'll be in the
well,
woods.
Well, that isn't that interesting that she said this week. I was going to bring that up. She said this week she's going to come out of the woods. Now, you know, the origin of that was a picture that was taken right after the election of her taking a walk in the woods and a constituent seeing her and taking a picture. So that's where that came from. But she came out of the woods today, in fact, and started tweeting. And she tweeted today, and I read the tweet, and I said, go back in the woods. You know, I mean, the problem
well,
here is that she has nothing to say. You know, look, I
right.
wish her, I don't wish her any ill. She
right.
was right near us, as a matter of fact, and that woods, in fact, was right near us. But I don't, you know, there's talk of her running for mayor of New York, and there's just a point, I think, when you have to stop reading your press clippings. I used to work for Johnny Carson, you know that, on The Tonight Show, and he talked about this once. He was a very philosophical man in certain respects, and he said, once you say goodbye, just say goodbye and leave graciously.
Right.
At least leave graciously.
And I think
that this, you know, it is true that Nixon came back, and you have to give him credit, despite
mm-hmm.
what we might think of him, but he came back and he won the 1968 election. But for the most part, comebacks don't work, and they become
That's
very
right.
awkward. They become very awkward. It's the old notion that if you strike the king, you must kill him. If you're going to make a comeback and you don't, and it doesn't go all the way, it looks foolish. So maybe
That's right. No, I think better
wise
to stay in the woods
else.
Or at least in the house that they have
the
there. Stay in the house for a while. I do want to say one quick thing. You mentioned, and then we'll get into all the heavy stuff, but. You mentioned about, you know, in recorded history that only in the last 50 or 60 years people have been able to go back and look at themselves when they were toddlers, you know, walking around or running around. My grandmother, who passed away in 1984, a very interesting life. She was born in 1892. She was actually born in Cuba when Cuba was actually a Spanish colony.
Mm.
And so she had in her birth certificate, she was not born in the Republic of Cuba. She was actually born in a province of Spain. Very interesting little birth certificate. But anyway, one time I was talking with her in about 1980, and I guess maybe a little bit after 1980 because there was some talk about the facts. So whenever the facts came in, which I think was in the early 80s, my grandmother said to me, you know, all of these new things, she said, I have more in common. When I was born, meaning 1892, she said, I had more in common with people living 500 years before me than I have with people, who were 100 years after I was born. And it's so true. I mean, when she was born in 1892, people were basically doing things the same way they were doing it a couple of hundred years before.
That's
though.
Right.
Not
yeah.
too much different. And I always, that expression from my grandmother always stuck with me every time I see new technology. You know, I'll never forget one more thing about this. In 1987, when our first son was born, I bought my very first CD about the time that he was born. I remember that. And saying, oh, my God, how things have changed. But I wanted to get started, Bill. It sort of ties into North Korea a little bit because that's turning into a pretty serious story. Today is the 13th anniversary of the beginning of the Iraq War number 2. It was when President Bush started the war, and I'm sure you remember watching it all on television like everybody else. And I still think, in retrospect, that was the right thing to do at the time. I mean, people say, if we knew then what we know now, well, that never happens. You never know then what you know now. I mean, that's a silly argument. But at the time, I thought he did the right thing. And when you look back at this, at Iraq, at least from my point of view, I don't think getting in was the problem, Bill. As many mistakes were made, that's fine. I accept that. But I think that it was the way we got out. That's where I think when you look at Iraq today is how we got out, not the fact that we got in. That was a mistake. So I still support the decision to go in. I just wish that we had not gotten out the way we did, Bill.
That's exactly right. And you know, MacArthur once said, and MacArthur was a controversial man, said some things that were wise, some things that were unwise. But he said, in war, there is no substitute for victory. And that's true. I think people kind of, in a strange way, in a very strange psychological way, were spoiled by World War II, where the Axis powers, Germany and Japan, Italy also, but that was another story, were defeated completely. I mean, they were defeated completely. They surrendered. It was an absolute surrender. They were occupied, and a new countries, in effect, emerged. And I think we got used to the idea that all wars end that way. Well, they sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. But the situation in Iraq was, you're exactly right. We actually had won the Iraq war. And the way in which we got out of Iraq was so bad that we reversed our own victory. And that was due entirely to the mistakes of Barack Obama, who never had much enthusiasm for victory in the first place. The word wasn't in his vocabulary. And in Afghanistan, I don't know what the objective is at this point. We have now been at war since 2001. I favored those military actions, as you did, as you just pointed out. But I think we have to have a very clear focus on where we're going, and I look to this administration to give us that focus. I we await it, but I'm optimistic that Trump will have a very different and much more decisive view than Obama did. But we are in also for a very long struggle against militant Islam and against international terror. We had a long struggle in the Cold War, and the American people endured because they were constantly reminded that if we don't do this, and if we don't do it right, and if we aren't prepared, and if we don't maintain our defenses, we'll have a third world war. And we avoided third world war. People forget that was one of the greatest accomplishments of modern history, ending the Cold War without fighting a world war. And we've forgotten that accomplishment.
Well, I bring up Iraq, obviously, because it's the anniversary, but also because we could be having a president here, President Trump, over the next few weeks may very well have to do make a decision very similar to what President Bush made, in the sense that he's going to have to act preemptively to attack someone who we feel could be a very serious threat to the country. I mean, this situation with North Korea, some people say, well, this guy doesn't have any power. Well, I certainly don't want to take that chance. I mean, when you're firing missiles, those missiles could hit cities, they could hit boats, they could hit military bases.
Yes.
I mean, they could hit anybody. And, you know, I don't know if you saw the video of the celebration they were having in North Korea when that missile went up. And I think President Trump may have to make a very tough call here. And if he decides to attack North Korea, I mean, I don't know exactly what the military operation would look like. It would be risky, but then again, having this fellow shoot missiles every 2 or 3 minutes, that's getting old and well, anyway, I think that we may have another president having to make a call like that again, Bill.
Yes. Well, I think you're quite right, and he could only do it though with the full support of Japan and South Korea. He could not make it as an independent decision, because he would have to get on television, explain it to the American people, and what he would have to say is, this evening, with the full support of our allies, we took the following action to remove a serious threat. And I think the American people would support him. I really do. The Democrats wouldn't necessarily support him. I mean, they have lost all connection with reality and with the American people. But I think that I don't know if our European allies will support it. Although I think it would be very difficult for them to oppose an action taken in Asia, where they have no direct influence. But I think it may be necessary because this is getting very, very serious. They're not doing anything to be cooperative. As the Secretary of State said, everything is on the table. And, of course, naturally it was reported that he was saber-rattling or threatening nuclear war. I mean, the press is going to get in its licks here. But if there is no progress on the North Korean front, there's going to have to be a serious escalation on our side. Now, some North Korean officials said today that if one shot is fired, they would nuke the United States. And, that is a threat to be taken seriously. They don't have the means of delivery of their nuclear weapons yet, but they might at some point. And if they can nuke the United States, that is a direct result of the failure of our diplomacy over the last 20 years, that it never actually achieved anything. And whose fault is that? You can blame both parties for that.
Well, you go back, I think, to this 94 deal that was made by President Clinton. I mean, that obviously didn't work or didn't work for the interests of the United States. I think in the case of President Bush, he was so focused on Iraq and terrorism that North Korea became probably an afterthought. During the Obama administration, I don't know what we could have done. But I think we've come to a point now where something has to be done. Either China pulls the plug on this guy, or we have to do something. Because this idea that, they're sitting there shooting missiles, and it seems like every time the missiles get bigger, Bill, it's like this is the risk that you simply, at some point, you have to say enough is enough. Now, personally, whether the Europeans support us or not, frankly, I could care less at this point, because Europe is almost lost, really, in many ways. I hate to say that about the continent where all of us came from, but or at least many of us. But the countries are so strange right now, what they're going through. But if we can get the Japanese and the South Koreans and at least the Chinese quietly, I go ahead and do it. Because China and I would think Japan and South Korea are even more concerned than we are, Bill.
I think definitely Japan is. Japan and Korea have never been all that close, of course. And I think that they are afraid that they could be attacked or even attacked by accident or attacked intentionally with the hope of maybe a quick North Korean victory over Japan, and one in which we could not reverse without enormous casualties. I mean, they are aware, North Korea, of course, that we fought a war there, that we became disgusted with the war after a while. It turned into what was called a stalemate. That's not really accurate, but we lost, I think, 38,000 men in Korea in the early 1950s. Americans have no stomach for going back in. And they might say, well, there's an opportunity for us. We might be able to take at least northern Japan, and the Americans will before the Americans mobilized. So I think the Japanese are concerned. They have a self-defense force that is important in its size and in its abilities. There have been stories in the last few weeks that force may be enlarged. I think that Japan will have to, with great pain, look at the possibility of developing its own nuclear weapons program. We don't want it to happen, but it may have to happen, because they may look at the United States and they say, well, Trump is with us, but will the next president be with us? I mean, what if the next president is some flaky left-wing Democrat who will say, well, we don't regard North Korea as an enemy, and this is a local problem, and you can easily get that. I mean, you can imagine what Bernie Sanders' foreign policy toward North Korea would be. It would probably need to go and apologize for the Korean War.
Either that or congratulate them for having universal health care. You might just say that North Korea has universal health care, so we should be like them. Bill, let me take a little break. When we come back, I want to talk about next week, which is going to be a rather amazing week in the city of Washington. It seems like everything is going to happen next week. We'll be right back. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, the Week in Review with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. We were just talking about North Korea, Bill, and next week is turning out to be a pretty amazing week. I mean, there's almost you've got so many things going on. You have the CIA director who will be addressing Congress or talking to Congress. You have Supreme Court hearings that are underway. You have the GOP Obamacare. Apparently, that looks like it's going to be resolved in the House, or it looks that way. And then, of course, a new Trump budget that I thought in general was pretty good. And it leads me to say something, Bill, about all of this. A year ago, March of 2016, if you had said to me at that time, and at that time I was not supporting Trump, as you know, but if you had said to me in March of 2016 that in March 2017, Neil Gorsuch was going to be the candidate for the Supreme Court, that the GOP was on the brink of repealing Obamacare, and that a budget like the one just presented would have been presented by a Republican president, I would have said, hey, sign me up. I like that president. Hmm. Well, that president is President Trump, Bill.
Yes. Well, look, we are in a very strange period. We have a president who is working his head off, and I've never seen a president work harder and you know, start as many initiatives as this president has. But he is an imperfect vessel, as we've said before on this broadcast. He makes a lot of mistakes in the things he says and these tweets, which I wish he would stop. And the press hates him. The press absolutely despises him and doesn't feel he's legitimate, because the press has been taught and trained in our universities to believe only one point of view is legitimate. So we have that very strange set of circumstances, and he has a party in Congress which really is not all that effective, even though it's in the majority. You know, it's the old problem of the Republican Party, that they really don't have that dynamic approach to things that they should. It's been pointed out correctly, I think. They've had 8 years to work on a replacement for Obamacare. And what they came up with was okay, but it's not dazzling to anybody. It may very well hurt some of the people in Trump's base unless they can make modifications. It may not even pass the Senate. And I think that it is an administration with enormous potential. As you said, just look at the things that have been done so far, but one that can easily stumble because of all the minefields placed in its way. And let's not forget that the 2018 election is only a year and a half from now, and the Democrats are already running, and what their goal is to stop the Trump administration, and Trump must get a great number of things done that people feel directly in their lives by that 2018 election to prevent any damage to what he is doing.
Well, he's getting at least some things seem to be happening. I'm very happy with the Supreme Court nomination.
Oh yes,
you wrote. Yeah. You wrote. I think it was yesterday that his Trump's agenda went down very well with the G20 countries, where he seemed to have scored a success. He had the Chancellor of Germany was in town, and I don't know, people say there was not a good meeting, but I think he spoke frankly with the Chancellor. They're not paying their way, and I think they need to be reminded of that. But the budget focuses a lot on the military, which I like. We need that. The budget also seems to be returning more power to the states, which I like a great deal. So I like it, but the wild card with President Trump is President Trump himself. I mean, it's like you never know when you wake up in the morning and have some crazy tweet about this or that, Bill.
Well, yes, it's, you know, this is a situation that we really haven't seen. I don't recall a situation quite like it, because he's so unusual for an American president. Now, there have been American presidents who have had a private side that is a little wild. Harry Truman, by the way, was very well known for being privately at times a bit out of control, writing strange letters to people, but not this way. By the way, during World War II, Winston Churchill had an officer assigned to him by the British Armed Forces essentially to keep him under control, to screen comments that he was making, because Churchill, a great man, it's an old saying that great men have great flaws, could, you know, engage in an outburst that might be embarrassing. But this is what we have right now. We have a Democratic Party that is in terrible shape. It has lost 1,000 legislative seats. It has lost most governors. It has lost the House, the Senate, the presidency. There's not much that they've won, and yet it is more militant and more vicious and more extreme than I have ever seen it. And even in their diminished state, they can bite, and they can hurt, and they can smear, and that's what they're doing. We have a Republican Party led by a president who isn't really even a member of the party, who's never been active in Republican affairs, who is not particularly well-liked by his party and by the leaders of his party, and yet who has a sense of effectiveness and a sense of vision that is very rare in politics. You know, the Secretary of State, Tillerson, was in, we mentioned North Korea, was in Korea this week, in Japan also, and he spoke very truthfully and very clearly about what our situation is there, much more clearly than any American official has spoken in recent years. So we have this very strange situation going on, and I can't really say that anybody understands it fully. And we also, I should have added also, we have a press corps that is more biased than it has ever been. So you have this set of circumstances. Trump is a fighter. That is one thing we know. He is also a man who is constantly underestimated. That's what we know. And I have a feeling that if he can get through the next month successfully, if he can get Gorsuch confirmed, if he can be cleared of all charges of collaboration with Russia, which I think will be true, that he may get on an even keel, and if he can keep his mouth shut on occasion, because the things he's proposing are generally very good things.
That's right. No, I think so. I think you're exactly right. If Melania could just take the tweet away and just kind of lock it somewhere, where you know he doesn't have access to it, I think that would help a lot. I mean, I know in a way, Bill, I understand why he does the tweet, because he feels that this is the easiest way for him to, in a sense, go around the media. And I certainly appreciate that, because the media has not been fair to President Trump. But the problem when you're tweeting things is that if somebody's not editing what you're tweeting, then sometimes you can say some things that can come back to haunt you. This wiretapping thing with President Obama could be one of those. I don't know. We'll find out probably next week. But you were talking about the Democrats, Bill, and I wanted to say something that I think kind of ties in to this. President Trump's best friend could very well be his enemies. Because this week,
yes,
Rachel Maddow made a total complete fool of herself.
That's right.
On television. I mean, that wasn't even you, – well, you were in television, so you know how it works. I don't know. Did somebody say to her what she was going – you know, I get the feeling that she didn't even know what she was presenting. And it's like you could just see in her face that she was lost in saying what she was saying. But she's made a fool out of herself. And in many ways, Bill, she's the face of a huge segment of the opposition, Bill.
Yes. Well, she oversold what she was presenting. I mean, she had two pages of a 1040 from 12 years ago, which simply proved two things. One, that Donald Trump is a very rich man, and two, that he pays a lot of taxes. Now, if the two pages had shown that he's a very rich man and didn't pay taxes, that would have been something else. But actually, that two-page document that she had helped Trump. Nobody was shocked at the fact that he makes enormous amounts of money, or that his company does. I mean, that's been brought up many times before. But there had been these, excuse me, these hints that he didn't pay taxes, or he paid less taxes than he should have. And it turned out that at least in that year, he paid quite a bit in income taxes, and that it was a big nothing burger. I mean, this big revelation proved nothing. She got an enormous rating for that one night, but it dropped down dramatically the next night when people found that they had been misled.
And that's the worst part. When you, and you having worked for Johnny Carson, I'm sure that Johnny understood how important it was to be, you know, you don't want to insult the intelligence of your audience.
That's
and
right.
I think that's what she did. I can tell you that my own experience with this whole thing of racial matter, like around 5 o'clock in the afternoon, my friend Michael Prada sent me a message saying that Rachel Maddow had Trump's taxes and she was going to reveal them tonight. And I sent a message back to him saying, well, she may have them, but that's highly illegal. I hope she understands that.
Yes.
And then I was with my son in the car about 8 o'clock or about the time that her show was on. And we were listening, and there was a local guy doing a show, and he said, he cracks up and he says, she's going to present 2005 tax returns. And I just laughed and I said, they go through all of that to present 2005 when he was a private citizen. So I just thought the whole thing, but it's typical, Bill, of what, you know, of these people on the left. You wrote an article about the University of Maryland where, you know, apparently they're going after conservatives as well. I mean, these people are really crazy, and they may be burning out. I mean, at some point, this kind of craziness, people just get burned out, because what else is going to happen to you, Bill, when you're that crazy?
Well, I craziness has its virtue in politics, is that it attracts other crazy people. But I think you're right. I think there's a revulsion toward that kind of thing. Now, as far as the tax returns go, my theory is, and it's just a theory, I have absolutely nothing to back this up, but that in some way Trump was involved in releasing those pages. Because you have to ask yourself the question, where would 2 pages of his tax returns come from? I mean, if somebody had his tax returns and wanted to do damage to Trump, he wouldn't just release 2 pages. He'd release a lot of the details and things like that. The reporter said he found them in his mailbox. I mean, really now? I mean, well, who put them there? The whole thing was very, very fishy. And it's interesting that the White House did not dispute the accuracy of those 2 pages, which they could have easily done. They could have easily said to Rachel Maddow, prove that those are actually his returns. And she wouldn't have been able to do it. But they didn't dispute it. I think in a way, as I said before, it benefited him to show that, yes, he's very wealthy, but he does pay his taxes. It's interesting, by the way, that no other year has been released. Now, maybe in other years the results was somewhat different. But it was a ridiculous show. Now, as far as the University of Maryland goes, what they did was they hired an administrator for undocumented students. This was one of the demands of undocumented students, that they have their own administrator who can, you know, nurture them, who can babysit, who can buy candy bars and things of that nature. It's an absolutely ridiculous thing to do. The University of Maryland is a public university. It gets its funding from the public. Where is it written that you have to have an assistant dean for undocumented students to make them feel more comfortable? I think that there is such revulsion toward this kind of thing generally in the education system, and that it is something that is going to, if not explode in the next couple of years, it is going to result in some governmental action involving federal aid to higher education, which may be cut back, and that would be a very popular step, I think, in this country, to try to send a message to some of these snowflake universities.
Well, I think you're exactly right. You know, as we've said before, there's 35 states where you have a Republican governor and a Republican legislature. And I know here in Texas, Governor Abbott has taken a tough stand against sanctuary cities and against some of these colleges. So they may find that they're going to be hurt where they don't want to be hurt, which is on the money side. But this is so silly. The whole idea that anybody would come up with this, but even worse than that, that the administration would even give this idea credibility. I mean, I would have told the undocumented students, I would have said to them, if I was the administrator, We don't do that. Go back to class. We don't do that. You know, go back to class and stop messing with us.
There are some pushbacks coming, but one of the most bizarre things that happened this week in the world of education was that at the University of Chicago, which is my alma mater, which has taken the most courageous and heroic and thoughtful stand defending free speech on university campuses, there were some student groups that came out against free speech for themselves. I mean, this is almost hilarious. They came out against the administration protecting their free speech. They said, well, not all free speech should be protected. Some of it is harmful.
Right.
Some of it is offensive to people. I think we really have got to investigate. There should be a really good journalistic investigation, if that is possible these days, of what kids are being taught, not only in college, but in high school. The schools of education in this country that produce high school teachers have been taken over largely by the political left. And they teach these kids social, quote, that they call social justice, even in high school. And social justice really is a code word for the left-wing agenda. And the left-wing agenda isn't too high on human freedom, that's for sure.
No. Not those people. They don't believe in they only like speech when they like it, Bill, when they agree with it. But the whole point of the First Amendment is to allow people that you disagree with. I mean, you don't need a First Amendment if everybody agrees with everybody.
That's right. Well,
you need a First Amendment to protect those who are saying things you disagree with. I mean, that's my take on it.
Well, there's an old saying that you don't need a First Amendment to protect popular speech. You need a First Amendment to protect unpopular speech. And, you know, no one in all of human history has ever gone to prison for agreeing with his government. I mean, it's the people who disagree who are in trouble.
Right.
And free speech is in trouble in America because it is under attack, and there is today a McCarthyism of the political left that is every bit as vicious and as destructive as the McCarthyism of the early 1950s. There are many, many similarities between what is going on today and what is going on and what went on in the 1950s, and that is the smearing of people's reputations, the destruction of careers, political correctness, which we had in the early 50s on the other side, basically a form of conformity, of enforced conformity, very similar to the McCarthy era.
Well, but one thing I would say, Bill, and you know more about this than I do, but I think this is worse for the simple reason that at least President Eisenhower and serious Democrats and serious Republicans stood up to McCarthy.
Yes.
I didn't see President Obama standing up to universities and telling them to cut it out.
And I
think that's the problem, that what you really need here is some sort of a Lieberman who gets up on the U.S. Senate floor and says, this is wrong, and this is why. That doesn't seem to be that person in the Democrat Party. There was in the Republican Party in the 50s, but there doesn't seem to be that person in the left. If I could just quickly go back to Rachel Maddow for a second, Bill,
sure.
Because another extremely funny thing that came out of that bizarre evening is that we learned that Bernie Sanders only paid 13% effective tax rate.
Yes.
And I guess the last year that we have his numbers. And, I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. I'm sure it's perfectly legal, and he should pay the least. He should only pay what he has to pay. But it is sort of interesting when you see this graphic. They had this graphic on television, Trump 25, Obama 18, Bernie Sanders 13. You know, it's amazing what a graphic will do to show the hypocrisy of these people, Bill.
Well, of course there's hypocrisy. You know, the Democratic Party which prides itself on being the party of the people. And at one time, I have to say, I think it was. I think at one time it was. And at one time it was, even though many of its leaders were patricians. You had men like Franklin Delano Roosevelt, came from a very, very wealthy family. You had Averell Harriman, governor of New York, one of the wealthiest families in America. But they really did have a sense of obligation and a sense that they wanted to help people. Today, you have a Democratic Party that claims to be interested in helping people, but what they generally wind up doing is not helping people, but helping leaders of groups and helping people in important positions. You know, you get the feeling that many of these cause groups, these within the Democratic Party, exist primarily to present them to represent themselves and to advance themselves rather than advancing the individual citizen. Point was made at the end of the Obama administration that the American people did not really in any way benefit from his administration. I mean, the country is no better off, and minorities are no better off today than they were 8 years ago. And, yes, the hypocrisy is enormous.
Yeah, and one of the reasons why I like the Trump budget is that one of the things they want to do is to send many of these programs as well as the funding to the states, where I think you could, in fact, be more helpful to people rather than to interest groups, because a lot of these interest groups are in Washington, D.C., and they love getting these programs because it keeps them in power, or at least it keeps them employed. But if you send the money back to Texas or New York, wherever it may be, then you'll have legislatures deciding where that money goes. I think the programs will be better, Bill, if they're run more closer to where the people are.
That's
and
right.
Closer to where the bureaucrats are. And I think in that sense, the Trump budget, at least, I mean, I didn't read every page of it, but the highlights that I saw were good. I mean, I think he's in the right direction in sending a lot of this power back to the states. Bill, another big story, in fact, this coming week, normally I ask you about next week at the end of the show, but let's talk about it now, because this coming week there are some big things happening in Washington, none bigger than the CIA director going to Congress. I don't even know if that's going to be a public hearing, because there's so much stuff that is going to be discussed that they may have to shut it or shut the doors and speak in private. But what do you make of this? I mean, do you think this is going to go, the director in front of Congress? I mean, there's a lot of members of Congress on both sides who are very unhappy with this director, Bill.
Well, actually, that's the new director who's going to go, I believe, is it? Are we talking about the new director, Pompeo?
No, I'm sorry. I'm talking about director. I said CIA. My mistake.
I meant FBI.
FBI. For,
yes.
Yeah, I'm sorry. That's my mistake. I said CIA, but my mistake. I meant the director of the FBI. My mistake.
James Comey. Well, he's become controversial because a year ago he had this magnificent, flawless reputation as Mr. Clean. Then he got involved a little bit in the campaign with comments about Hillary Clinton and then refusing to indict her, even though he gave the best indictment speech I've ever heard. I mean, and then say, but on the other hand, you know. And then there were these questions as to whether he helped Trump or hurt Trump and other things that may come out about the FBI. The FBI has always had its share of controversy. I don't know what he's going to say. My suspicion, and it's really just a suspicion, is that he will say there's no evidence whatever that anybody in the Trump campaign colluded with Russia, which will be good news for Trump. But then he will probably also say we have no evidence that anybody in the government ever wiretapped Trump Tower, which would not be good news for Trump. That is my guess, and it's only a guess, that that's what will come out of the hearings and that each side will make of it what it wishes. I think that they will probably say, because as you mentioned earlier in the program, Democratic leaders were already passing the word that there is nothing to the stories about Trump people colluding with Russian agents. As far as Trump being wiretapped, it was foolish of him to say it unless he had the documented information ready to be released. And he keeps on doubling down. He's not a stupid man. I suspect something did happen. I suspect that there were people in the Trump organization that were picked up on wiretaps. Whether the wiretapping was of them or whether it was on the person they were talking to is another story. That's a very interesting part of these things. Sometimes people just get picked up on wiretaps because the other side is being wiretapped, the other party in the conversation is being wiretapped. That, I think, may require a little bit more investigation. But I think what Trump needs is for somebody to say, look, we can't rule it out. or look, there could have been a third party involved here. Yes, there were some things that were done maybe inadvertently that were inappropriate. Anything that gets him off the hook, because he's way out on the hook right now on this wiretapping story. The only thing that the press will be interested in is whether that part of the story proves true. If his people are exonerated, it'll get one line. You know that. That's the way the press operates with this administration. They are looking for some way to nail Trump.
Right. Yeah, if the Russia story, if that's right, if Director Comey, and again, I meant FBI director, not the CIA director. My apologies to the audience. I said CIA, but I meant FBI. But I think if the director comes out first sentence out of his mouth saying that there's no evidence, and I think you're right. I think that he's going to say something like that, no evidence of Russia and Trump. The base is still not going to drop it, Bill, because they're so invested in this for fundraising that they're just going to say, well, this is Comey once again bailing out the Republicans. And so I don't think the story is going to go away, but maybe some of the more serious media will finally drop it, Bill.
Well, I would hope so, but so far the media has been a complete disaster in the time since Trump took office. The mainstream media regards this as a dangerous presidency that they must take extreme action as journalists. I wish they had taken some extreme action in 2008, like doing their jobs and vetting Barack Obama, but they didn't. And people see the difference.
Right.
Do see the difference. So we will have to see how this develops. You even had a case today, Fareed Zakaria, from CNN, apparently going completely crazy on the air and cursing and using foul language in reference to the Trump administration. Now, I think he should be sent to a rest home for a while. There are a number of rest homes. We can send him to one in Syria. We can send him to a couple of other places. Or we can send him to a rest home near Harvard, where he got his PhD.
Right.
And maybe they can treat him. But this kind of behavior by a newsman on television would have resulted in a dismissal 20 years ago. Without any question, he'd be off the air.
Well, certainly, if somebody in the right had done it, I guarantee you that this would have been.
Oh.
I mean, can you imagine Rush Limbaugh or Sean Hannity doing something like that? There would have been demonstrations defending the dignity of our children who have to hear that.
Yes, we must defend the children. I have a friend of mine who says anyone in politics, whoever says they're doing something for the children, run in the opposite direction. You know, we ought to get to that actually and talk about the fact that in the budget that you mentioned before that President Trump released, and I agree with you. I thought in general terms it was a good budget. It's dead on. All budgets are dead on arrival. They all get changed by Congress. But I found it so amusing that right according to form. According to tradition, as soon as that budget was released, the defenders of our children immediately announced that if this budget goes through, there will be no more Big Bird. Our children will not have any children's programs to watch. There will be no American history on television. I mean, you just have this image of poor children in rags walking through the streets, yearning for Big Bird, who will be taken away from them by Donald Trump. When in fact, it's long overdue that federal involvement in broadcasting be at least reduced, if not eliminated completely. The people behind Big Bird and all this other Big This and Uncle Bob and Aunt Jo or whatever, that's one of the richest broadcasting organizations in the world. I mean, it's a thriving concern, and I see no reason why the federal government should be in the broadcasting business. There is plenty of opportunity for children's programs. They will not only go on, they probably will thrive. I think there are very, very important issues involved in whether or not the federal government of this particular country should be involved in broadcasting. During World War II, by the way, when we had the Office of War Information, which I believe was abolished during the war or at least reduced, there was concern that it could easily turn into a propaganda outlet. And I, for one, am not interested in this country having something like the BBC. which has very, very often misled people with its left-wing broadcast. As far as some other aspects of the budget, there are things that have to be looked at. If they're looked at in detail, and once the budget is adjusted by Congress, I suspect it will probably look somewhat like the budget submitted by President Trump, which does what it should do, which is, and the most important thing, I think, is to immediately increase the allocation for the Defense Department to rebuild the American armed forces. That has to come first.
And that's the best part of the budget, obviously.
Yes.
It does increase the military substantially. But my reference to the National Endowment for the Arts, my suggestion to artists is that they need to go out and get some sponsors. And if they want to do music or paintings or whatever, there's plenty of very nice people out there who will sponsor them. As far as NPR and PBS, there may have been a case for PBS 50 years ago. I can maybe accept that, but not today with as many choices as you have. And when I saw a number, Bill, that Big Bird is a $6 million business, and that was 15 years ago or so. This is a huge business. They can easily make it on their own, whether it's on PBS or go somewhere else. So if they're expecting the government to fund them, I think Trump is in the right direction here and cutting that back. The other big organization, too, Bill, that is going to be cut back is the EPA, and that is a good idea, Bill, because the EPA has become everything but an organization that cares about the environment, Bill. They just care about going after manufacturing companies and making life miserable, Bill.
Yes. Everything I hear from people in business is the feeling that the EPA is grossly unfair, that it harasses people, that it has probably done some good things over the years. Ironically, it was created by Richard Nixon, which I think is interesting. And maybe in the earlier years, we needed an EPA. There was at one time a major pollution problem. I think that was a very legitimate thing to deal with. I'm not so sure they are equipped to deal with companies on an individual basis where you have to be sensitive to the fact that there are jobs involved and incomes involved and populations involved. I also think that from what I understand from business people who've been involved with the EPA, that they're very arbitrary and that they can often do, as government regulators can do, more harm than good. One of those things about government is, I guess it is human nature, that once you start these government agencies, often based on something good that somebody has done originally,
mm-hmm.
you can't get rid of them. They just keep on going on and on. They grow and grow and grow, and they become enormous bureaucracies that are run for the benefit of the bureaucracy.
Well, the other thing, too, with the EPA, Bill, I think the EPA became, once President Obama couldn't get anything done through Congress, which is the way he should have done it, the EPA became his little personal agency, and they were basically running, through executive orders, they were doing this and this and this and that. And I can tell you that they're not very popular here in Texas. I'll tell you that right now.
The EPA is
not a very popular place here. Well, Bill, as far as next week, I think we are probably going to be seeing a lot of action. My guess is that next Sunday night when we get together, we'll have a lot of last week to review, because this is a huge week. Obamacare could be over in the House the first week of the Supreme Court. The FBI director, it could be a huge week, Bill.
Yes, and also the beginning tomorrow of the confirmation hearings for Neil Gorsuch, which are going to last 4 days, which is ridiculous. They can do this whole thing in one day. It's going to be televised. I know that the Washington establishment cannot wait for Gorsuch to be confronted by the geniuses in the Democratic Party. I have a feeling these hearings are going to put people to sleep so fast that the ratings-conscious TV people will want to get them over with as quickly as possible. We'll have that. We will have the hearings of the FBI and CIA people testifying. We will have, as you said, Obamacare. We will also have something else, and that is this continuing issue that you brought up with North Korea, which is not getting any better. And, as you made the point, there may be some very tough decisions ahead. We will also, I think, get a kind of early evaluation of the work of Rex Tillerson as Secretary of State. So far, from what I've seen, I've been rather impressed with him.
This is sort of the week that he came out, isn't it, Bill? I mean, he had been very quiet there for a while, and yet over the last week or so, he came out, and I was impressed with him too, Bill.
Yes, and of course, he's right out of central casting. I mean, you know, he has if the Republicans need a nominee for president, at least he looks like one, you know?
Right, right.
He has that look. I have a feeling he will do very well as Secretary of State. The Democrats, of course, will attack him at every turn. One foreign policy magazine already called him the worst Secretary of State in history after he's been in office for about a month. So, I mean, that's how bad the commentary is getting.
This is the way of the left. Obama was the greatest president in history after 1 month. Tillerson is the worst Secretary of State. I mean, these people are – I don't know if they realize how stupid they sound. I guess they don't because this is so ridiculous. But, Bill, we're going to have to end it tonight, but I look forward to next week. I think there's a lot that will – this is going to be an important week for the country and for President Trump, and as you indicated, the wild card. I think in all of this, the one story that could really dominate the week is North Korea, because you could have a war started there by accident. I mean, really, that's how crazy it is.
Well, yes, and the North Korean government is very unstable, not to be trusted, and I don't know the degree to which China can actually control them.
Well, I used to think that they did, but I've come to the conclusion that they really can't. Or that they don't want to. I'll just put it that way.
Maybe they
can if they really wanted to, but they haven't shown any interest. And if they're not going to do anything about it, then I guess we're going to have to do something about it. Bill, have a great week. I look forward to your following in all of these stories. We'll check with Urgent Agenda and see what you're covering. But as always, thank you for your time.
Oh, it's a pleasure always, and I look forward to next Sunday night.
All right. Thank you so much. Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. We had a lot to talk about from last week. We're going to have even more next week. I think next week is going to be probably one of the most consequential weeks that we've had in Washington in quite some time. Good night, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas.